Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who's an inspiration to rowers. It's Richard Herring. Hello. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Leviathan Sculling Transatlantically podcast. Very exciting news. I was talking to Duncan Hughes and his crew who've just completed the Talisker Atlantic Challenge. They came in third place. They had a copy of... They've rowed across the Atlantic. They had a copy of my book, Emergency Questions, and kept each other amused by asking themselves emergency questions as they travelled. If they hadn't wasted that time, they might have come first. But, you know, it's still backed by emergency questions. Anyway, they call it Rahalastapas, so that's pretty good. I've got a picture of them up there. I should have put that up. There they are. Fantastic guys having rowed the Atlantic, and they're asking each other emergency questions. Absolutely crazy. What's been going on for me? I've been watching Scooby-Doo with my son. He sort of got into Scooby-Doo without knowing what it was. He had the Haunted Mansion toy. So I bought the DVD to watch the original Scooby-Doo, Where Are You, with him. There's a few things that I've realised about it. So far, nobody has said we'd have got away with it too if it wasn't for you pesky kids. I'm starting to wonder if that might just be like an apocryphal thing that never actually happened. If so, a lot of stand-ups are going to have to rewrite their entire stand-up sets. My son went nuts for the bit at the end of the first episode where the ghost came back and then it turned out to be Scooby. I said, it's a good job you like that joke because that is going to... You're going to see a lot of that. But the sad thing I realised was that the show was made in 1969, so Scooby-Doo, the oldest dog that's ever lived, was 30 years old. Scooby-Doo is definitely dead. It's hard to watch the show knowing that. It makes it very sad. It's no consolation to me that Scrappy-Doo is also dead. I don't think that makes up for the death of Scooby. I think all the gang are probably still alive. Velma says Shaggy's the best gymnast at school. So they're at school recording, so they might be in their 70s now. But it's very sad to think Scooby-Doo's no longer with us, and I haven't seen an obituary for him. I was wondering if they could do a reboot of Scooby-Doo, like they've done a reboot of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
And it could be Shaggy in sort of middle age being haunted by the ghost of the talking dog that he once knew. It could be quite moving and scary and upsetting. It'd be quite, you know, he isn't really a ghost. He's just a man. I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, the good news is I'm free of COVID. I tested negative yesterday. Still a little bit tired, but I have no more COVID in my body. Though the bad news is the news story is coming in that coronavirus lingers in the penis and could cause impotence. With all the genital worries I've had over the last year, that's the last thing I need. Someone else saying it had made their penis shrink. So I don't know if that's just a way to try and get people to take the vaccine, because I think that'll get quite a lot of the guys who are refusing to take the vaccine to take the vaccine. they should have put that up front 2 years ago if they were really planning this properly. Anyway, I think I'm better, so we will see. But I've got a very exciting guest. We've got a transatlantic guest as well today. That's why I put the American flag up behind me to make him feel at home. I'm sure that has made him feel very happy. He's probably best known as the voice of Ham Sandwich in Meltdown. That's why we're all here today. Well, he's been on the show before. He's back. Will you please welcome the amazing David Cross, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, David.
Hi.
How are you? I don't know who I'm talking to when I'm saying welcome, David Cross, but there you go. Hello.
Hi. So I'm not, there's some mistake. I don't know what my bio says or my current bio or Wikipedia, but I am not, not that I have any problem with any of this at all, but I am not trans. Yep. I'm not trans.
Okay.
I mean, I hope I'm considered an ally, but I'm not. That's a mistake.
Okay. I think it's the Atlantic that's trans, which is, you know, people have accepted an ocean, maybe seeing itself as a sea. I don't know.
I'm not trying to change the ocean either. I'm not trying to alter. Okay, I mean, maybe I need to do some studying up on this, but yeah, okay. And also, okay, what was ham? What would you say? What'd you say, ham sandwich?
Well, according to IMDb, you were the voice of Ham Sandwich in Meltdown. It was a choice between that and the turd in One Day was going to be. You've done a lot of voice work in your time.
Yeah, but
Meltdown. Do you remember it? David Cross is a common name. It might be someone else. B.
Could be, yep.
It was about 30 years ago. Well, it was, well, not 30, 20 year, 25 years ago, maybe.
I don't know what that is.
It was a long time ago, so. I was going to ask you mainly about the ham sandwich roll, so that's blown the interview if you don't remember it.
I don't. I remember playing a patty melt in, that's actually coming out right now. It's Coen Brothers Macbeth. I play patty melt. Do the voiceover of patty melt. I do a Reuben sandwich. I've done coronation chicken salad thing. I did that when I was in the UK. Oh, gosh.
I mean, they call on you for a lot of foods. You know, yeah. If a food needs to be personified, I think you're the first guy that people generally go to.
I wish, because that other fucker takes all the work. I'm like the second guy. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, it's still good to be the second guy. The first guy can't do it. There's a lot of food to be voiced. That's the thing. The first thing I want to take issue with, you were on the show before in 2016, in which you predicted quite confidently that Donald Trump would not win the presidential election.
Yeah, I was very wrong on that.
Why should we listen to anything you have to say when you've let us down? So you relaxed us.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't have listened to me then, and you shouldn't listen to me now.
Okay.
I guess I severely underestimated the power of all those, the culmination and the combination of all those aspects and things, the media and ignorance and willful ignorance and the duplicity and all that kind of stuff. I just, I underestimated it. And yeah. I didn't think that I never would have imagined Hillary Clinton would have dropped the ball so severely in the last week. And she did some pretty, she made some bad choices. But, the culmination of all those things and the Comey report coming out days earlier, all that stuff. I didn't foresee that.
No. So we won't ask for your predictions about Tim Minchin.
I'm very positive about this, that in the UK, you will vote Remain. I'm dead set on that.
Well, Tim Minchin was on about the same time as you, and he said Donald Trump won't win, Brexit won't happen, and something else, and he was wrong on all three. So you were, you've done your bet. You're more of a Nostradamus than Tim Minchin, but yeah. But, you know, all these things are reversible. Well, actually, probably not. Brexit isn't reversible. But do you think Donald Trump will win the next presidential election?
I mean, he may, and 70 million other Americans may claim he's the next president, but that doesn't mean he'll legitimately win the presidency. I don't know. All bets are off now. I mean, it's I don't imagine you follow what's going on here too closely, but it's with the they're going to vote. The Senate's going to vote on voting rights tonight, and it's not going to pass. And they're not going to carve out the filibuster. It's not going to happen. And you know, unless I'm sure that every senator's or Democrat senator's aides and has a basic. Group of people just poring over the kind of minutia of how do we get this passed through the Senate without the traditional ways. But I don't see it happening.
No. I mean, the world looks quite bad. It looks worse than it was the last time I talked to you. But maybe we've been through the... No, we haven't. I was going to say maybe we've been through the worst, but I can't convince myself of that.
I mean, maybe. I think... I was there. I was in London during the Brexit vote. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure you remember what that next day was like. It was just zombies and people like couldn't believe it had happened. And and, you know, there was that feeling in the States, too, when Trump won. I mean, there was crying. People were crying. They were, you know.
Yeah. Well, for all the things that happened in Britain, it seemed to be like the day before you'd go to bed and they were saying, this is fine, this is happening, the elections is fine, this is happening, the vote, this is happening. And you woke up and then you'd woken up in the different reality. So it was an interesting time. Well, you know, we're having, again, this is going to go out in 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, our predictions may be proven wrong very quickly. But
so what do you think is going to... Oh, go ahead. That's what I was going to ask.
Boris Johnson's still hanging on as Prime Minister, yes.
But Do you think he'll be around when this airs?
My prediction is he will still be the Prime Minister because he's not... I would say it's looking a bit less likely, but just I think he's just... him and Trump have no shame. Yeah. They can't... In the past, politicians, if they did something wrong, sort of either were pushed or had some kind of...
I know we need to bring back and introduce to Western culture the what's it called, seppuku, the Japanese, you know, self disembowelment when you do something shameful.
Very much the British way was the loaded shotgun and you'd just go into your office and shoot yourself in the head. So, you know, things have moved on a long way since then. So I don't know. He might do. It's interesting because
you have to read beyond the actual headline and try to suss out why am I getting these stories now and what's the significance. But I've seen just in the last, I'd say 72 hours, I've seen like four stories. I can't remember her name. The conservative woman.
Amber Rudd? Is it?
Tessa. I've seen a bunch of stories. She's got kind of like shorter blonde hair. Right. She's conservative. She's a Tory, and had something. But these kind of very carefully worded, a little like, could she be next in line? Like, obviously, people have talked about she's next in line.
Liz Truss, I think. Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
But she's. I don't think, well, that's the thing. And I think the same with Trump. If he doesn't come back the thing is, the door's open.
And right.
Someone were, you know, and so like with the Conservatives here, I think you sort of want Boris Johnson to stay because A, I think the next person will be worse, but B, hopefully people won't vote for him. I think the Tories maybe still believe that in 2 years' time, people will have forgotten about all this and still vote. For,
yeah.
Still vote.
Maybe.
But people are pretty cross about it. It takes a lot because he's done a lot of shit. Right from the beginning, yeah. he sort of disrespected the Queen on his first week and he got through that.
Well, so, I'm not going to fault him for that.
Well, that's it. But a lot of these things, you know, and I don't know, sort of democracy has now become this. It's become who's the best at getting people to vote rather than coming up with a policy and saying, do you want to vote for that? It's finding out what people will vote for and then not having to do it.
And even through subversion and lies and, putting out misinformation, like, the vote's going to be 3 o'clock on November 6th or whatever.
Oh, well, this brings us to your special, which we'll talk about, which is called I'm From the Future. On Netflix, I believe.
Not on Netflix. No.
Let's edit that out. What's it on?
It's available as of now, exclusively. It might change later, but right now it's available on my website, which is officialdavidcross.com. And we've got different kind of packages, and that's where you can go see it.
Great. Okay, so we'll head there. It's well worth seeing. Enjoyed it very much. I mean, it's very challenging and intellectual. I don't know if it's wrong that the bit I enjoyed the most and that I identified with the most was the bit about do you know which bit I'm going to say? Was the bit about being a middle-aged man and dreaming about having to have a shit.
That
half your dream is taken up with just looking for somewhere to have a shit.
It started like a good 10 years ago, I want to say. And it really is like, and I think you're being a bit kind to call us middle-aged, but we're on the other side of it. But it's just something that it wasn't even like I was like, I'm going to write a, scatological bit about, it just was something that occurred to me when I was, because I was initially doing that, the thing that prefaces that about dreaming, daydreaming about doing stand-up again, because I didn't get to do it for a year and a half because of COVID. And then I just sort of stumbled on that because it is a real thing that I can't tell you how many times I've been having a very nice dream. Fun things are happening. It's challenging. Yeah. It's erotically charged. It's it's a fun, interesting dream, and then it just shifts. We're like, I'm just trying to find a place to take a dump, and wherever I am, outdoors, indoors, my house, somebody else's house, it's like, hang on, hey, this isn't working, and so you can relate to that. You've had that happen.
Absolutely. That happens to me all the time. So it's like a proper piece of observational comedy, which isn't usually my thing. But I love it when an observation is something like that, that's sort of that way out there. But then it turns out to be, at least for me, my wife also enjoyed it. And I don't think she has the same issue. I don't think she's. I don't know. I didn't ask her. But I was literally pissing myself at that book, because I am very old, but it's a very funny bit. There's Chris Evans was saying, who's not that one, not the Captain America one, my director. The start of the show, even the before you get on stage, is a lot of fun because a lot of stand up specials sort of follow the comedian around backstage, and that's sort of the cliche, and it's a bit embarrassing.
Yeah.
But what's very lovely about this is you sort of stick with the cameraman, and again, we won't say too much about it, but it's a really cool way to start it. That the cameraman's being a bit of an asshole,
and that's
see a bit of his life.
That's the voice of John Benjamin from Archer and Bob's Burgers. He's an old friend of mine. We go way, way back to Boston in the early 90s. And I was just looking for some way to open it up. And I was like, oh, I know, I'll get John to you know, voice a douchey.
Yeah, it's nice because then it's just a little extra bit at the front, and you could miss it. You could be getting your drink and miss it, but it's nice. But the actual the opening of the show.
Yeah, don't give it away.
I won't give it away, but it's very ballsy, right?
And it's my favorite opening I've ever done.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
I mean, people will watch it and then they'll understand a bit more about it. But it's a very serious start, and it sort of. I wondered how much it wrong foots the audience, because it wrong foots the audience a little bit in the special a couple of times.
Yeah, but I mean that's the
idea, right?
Yeah, and I. Before people really knew who I was, that was a lot of what I did in stand-up. I'd come out and I'd do like a character, or I'd do something that would, and try to make the audience a little uncomfortable, or if not uncomfortable, then question whether this was legit or not, you know?
Sure.
And you know, I'm not able to do that anymore for obvious reasons, but I love that feeling of people truly going, where is he going with this? What is this? What is he? Why is he doing this? What is he talking about? Where is this going to end up? And I love that kind of thing, especially in the beginning of a set. Yeah. And you know, at this point, I mean, these are all my fans, and it's a TV taping, and so you know, they know it's not going to be something. They know it'll have a point to it, I guess.
Sure.
And
I suppose, but there's an element, you know, you're thinking, well, there's going to be a reveal. There's going to be a joke, but there's a part of thinking, oh, maybe he's going to do a really serious show about his family history or something.
Yeah.
It's really, there's a tension, but you know, I've done stuff not exactly like that, but in that sort of same genre, I suppose. And it's sometimes like, even if you're trying to do a slightly serious bit, or you've got a serious bit that will be the most risky thing, you do a bit that's a long, serious bit that then has a punchline, is that somebody in the audience shouts out at the wrong time or laughs at the wrong bit.
Always a danger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that a number of times before the taping, and you know, sometimes people wouldn't react at all. There'd be no reaction. And sometimes, and I think it happens in the special, you get people who left. There's one certain tiny thing that they laugh at, and I just plow through it. And that happened at the same point every time.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, we won't do what I thoroughly recommend this. It's a brilliant show, and I will try not to spoil it. But I think one of the
can I just tell him one more time? It's officialdavidcross.com, and that's where you can see the special, the new one. It's called "I'm from the Future."
Absolutely, we'll put that in the blurb and everything, so everyone can follow the link. It's well.
Oh, you'll probably put it up. But you'll probably do a graphic, right? I'm so sorry, Richard.
We can put something up, but we'll do something for you. But I think what's interesting, and it is discussed within the show, and you mention it there, even that there was 18 months where you weren't able to perform. And I think you make it clear within the show how important that is. How was that 18 months? You may have been acting and things, but away from stand up,
it was awful. And I've never gone that long, and I. You know, I talk about it briefly, and I think any stand-up comic can relate to that feeling, or anybody who has the thing that brings them joy, the thing it's not just a want, it's a need at some point. And when you take the ability to do that away, it's a minor irritant at first, and then it really becomes this kind of palpable weight. And it was, and part of it too was, I was locked down in Toronto for almost 6 months, and we didn't know that was going to happen. My family, my wife got was working there, and she's amongst many other things, she's an actress, and she was on Why the Last Man, which was shooting in Toronto. And once COVID became kind of serious as it was, we realized, oh, the whole family's going to have to move up there, because Toronto's a quick flight from New York. And we thought, okay, we'll be going back and forth, and she'll go out there. It's part of a large ensemble, so she'll work for 4 days and then have, you know, 8 days off and come home and back and forth. And we have a young daughter.
Sure.
So we went to, we had to kind of uproot and move the family to Toronto and just, you know, get a Airbnb on, you know, on the internet and go, I guess that one will be okay. And get there. And, it was as stuff was really starting to open up in New York, and then Toronto just shut down. And it was, except for 2 weeks in mid-March, it was under stay-at-home orders, lockdown, nothing's open, no pubs, no restaurants. It was really tough. And we had she was three and then turned four while she was in Toronto. But, and there's nothing to do. And I don't know anybody in Toronto. And I assumed sure. that I was going to, like, and I was looking forward to it. Like, oh, it's cool. We'll be there for half a year. I'll get a residency somewhere. Toronto's great. I love it. It's a great city. I've done plenty of stand-up. I've recorded an album there. It's really good for me. And I was looking forward to it. And that was just it was deeply depressing and upsetting. And, you know, none of my kids' friends are there, and nobody she knows, and I couldn't work. I was very, 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 very lucky that I picked up a little bit of work here and there. I did a couple episodes of Station 11, which I'm you know, thrilled to be a part of that production, and just other stuff here and there. But for the most part, no stand up. And by the time I got back to the States, where everything was opened up in New York, it had been a year and a half since I had done a set. And I remember getting emotional. I remember exactly where I was. It was at a place called the Sultan Room in Bushwick in Brooklyn, and getting up there and just almost starting to tear up with emotion. Yeah. That's where that bit came from. I just sort of riffed it. I didn't plan on it. I was saying, like, I've dreamed of this. I have literally dreamed of this moment. And that's when I went off. I was like, and you were there. And then, you know, it was very difficult. Probably the most, the toughest thing, because there was also, while it was happening, it wasn't like I could look at a calendar and go, June 22nd, I'll be able to get back on stage. Okay, well, it's only 6 months. And then you just didn't know how bad is this thing going to get? This could get worse and worse and worse. And I may never get to go to a hot, you know, sweaty, dank, damp basement, you know, in Brooklyn, you know, humid, and trot out my meanderings again.
No. Did you consider anything online, or was that?
No, very early on, when people started doing that, I knew, like, oh, that's not for me. That's not going to, it won't work for me. And I did other people's shows, but I would go on and just talk to them or just do kind of a character. But the idea of doing stand up, I'm not that kind of stand up, you know?
Yeah. No, I did about two or three actual gigs, I suppose. And they were okay, but it was okay in order to test out some material and just say some stuff. But
yeah,
it wasn't the same.
No,
although I sort of, you know, I mean, you do lots of different things, and I do writing, and I do I started doing more acting actually in lockdown. Weirdly, I've got a couple of acting jobs, and I sort of made a decision not to. I said I'm not going to do any stand up I've ever done before lockdown, after lockdown. But then I haven't actually gone and done much stand-up, so I need to write a new show. But I made the decision to burn everything up through
well,
that start again.
That's where this special came from. So I was supposed to be on tour. In fact, I probably would be in the, you know, European phase of the tour, like probably in the next couple months, and as it was planned. And I had to cancel my tour, which is will probably remain the most disappointing thing I've ever had to do professionally. And you know, stuff was booked, and you know, tickets were being sold, and it was just COVID was getting out of hand. And I picked, not intentionally, but I picked like two of the worst areas to start the tour in, like in as far as COVID in the in, like the Midwest and the South. And I was like, oh my God, this is terrible, you know. And so I made the tough decision to cancel the tour. But I was like, a lot of this material, not all of it. But specifically the stuff about, you know, anti-vax and COVID-y things and, wearing a mask and also is the stuff about, whether or not to euthanize my dog, which is a big bit. I was like, by the time I get out and do stand up again, which who knows when it'll be, a year and a half from now that I'm able to tour again, like I'm not going to be doing any of this material. So rather than just have it go away, I kind of scrambled together and, you know, I had some shows that I was getting ready to do that I was doing to get ready for the tour. And I just went and taped those last shows.
Right.
But so that I have it, it exists. Otherwise it wouldn't be anywhere. And we wouldn't be having this conversation right
we
now,
wouldn't.
Richard.
So, you know, all the good that's come out of this terrible, tragic event. I mean, it's nice to see someone. It's sort of that decision, isn't it? Whether you talk about COVID or you try not to talk about COVID. But I think it actually, I think I've seen you talk about this somewhere else, but it's sort of like after 9/11, people wanted people to talk about it. And I think people, you need to, through comedy, you need to sort of process.
Yeah.
What's happened, right?
Yeah, it was, I think I do a pretty good job of intuiting whether, you know, okay, how much is too much? Where do I put this in? You know, I don't want to, I can use COVID to talk about other things so that it doesn't feel like, oh, it's, you know, it's an hour special, but 30 minutes of it is COVID. So hopefully it doesn't feel like that, even though I use it as jumping off points for bits that become about other things. But,
sure.
I numerous times, like, after every show, people would, you know, I'd get some comment that was, some sort of variation of like, you know, thanks for saying that. That's what I've been trying to, you're putting into words the things that I was feeling, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's a place, I guess it's a show that even though there's a lot of laughs and everything, and it's a comedy show, there's a place that allows like-minded people to get angry and vent and do it in a funny way. You know, I think that's what was kind of what it was, there was a bit of a release for some people, you know.
Sure. And I think that, well, the bit that certainly resonates because it sort of happens so much that's both funny and not funny, but you make it funny. But you know, anti-vaxxers or people who won't take the vaccination dying. There's one in the paper today about folks who are in the Czech Republic who caught COVID on purpose to get it out of the way without being vaccinated and died. I don't think she was particularly an anti-vaxxer.
That's one way to get it out of the way. I wouldn't follow that path, but...
But it's because it's one of those things that is obviously tragic, but also...
No, it's not. Sorry.
Yeah.
I think we have to temper... the idea that it's tragic. In the overall picture, it's tragic, but this has been the case forever, that people are so easily manipulated or ruled by emotion that and tribalism that they do things that harm them and harm their families and their loved ones. And that, in a sense, is tragic. But if you've been given, I mean, at some point, it's been years and people are, and you know, I address that in the special briefly. Like, I don't agree, but I understand why some of those people are, believe the things they believe and how important it is to them. And, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know if tragic is the word.
Yeah, but I suppose the thing is, there's, you know, I think most comedians would joke about it, I think, but I think most people might want to vocalize. That's one of the things I think people would want to vocalize, that there's an element of you go, well, you know, if they're going to take that risk and then it backfires on them, that's sort of funny. But I think most people probably wouldn't say it out loud. So it's nice to hear someone.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious.
It's nice to hear someone describe that to you. That it's a humored thing of going, well, that, you know, to laugh and maybe feel you shouldn't laugh. But as a comedian, that's sort of what we do all the time, I suppose.
There's a difference. Yeah. I think that's, you know, kind of what I do, or it's the things that you would say, the jokes you would make with your friends at a pub over drinks that isn't proper to say outside of that. Like, I make those jokes out up on the stage, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I get, did you have a lot of fun? I wondered if you'd come up with a lot of options for the things that was as bad as wearing a mask.
Yes,
or did those change every day?
No, I had like an ever growing list, and you know, you can only do so much, and I would cut things and I kept it at a certain length, but there were a bunch of others. Yeah.
I mean, that's a fun thing to, because the other day I nearly got getting rid of a cardboard box, and I nearly got a cardboard cut off the box, but I didn't quite, it just left a little bit of a mark. And I think that's the sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing. So it's a fun game to people that have to play at home, things that are as bad as being made to wear a mask. So that's another little bit of sort of way of doing observational comedy through the back door as well. But it's really nice stuff. Well, let's talk about it. It is great. It's a great show. Go and get it. We won't talk about it too much more because I don't want to wreck everything.
Yeah, haven't seen it.
No. So I think we've skirted around without giving away too much. But
nobody wants to hear 30 minutes on something that they haven't watched. Or, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
But I was going to ask if you've seen Bob Odenkirk and is everything going okay? He's obviously, I know he's touring the UK, so he's back on his feet.
Oh, I don't know exactly how long it was, but I would say roughly 10 days after he got out of the hospital. Maybe not even 10 days, but he was in New York and he has a place in Manhattan. I live in Brooklyn, and you know, we had made plans to get together, and he fucking rode his bike, rode a city bike. Right. He rode his bike from like the village down to the bridge over the Manhattan Bridge, and then up to where I just rode his bike after being in the hospital for 3 days, forced. What's that called when they force you in a induced coma? And so it's pretty amazing what they're able to do now to clean up your heart and your arteries and your aorta, and they don't even need. It's not even an invasive surgery anymore. It's like they go in with, they basically go and blow it out. And they went through his arm and there's no like scarring. It's crazy.
Sure.
He's great. Yeah,
I'm hoping to get him as a guest when he comes over in March, because we're doing the shows back at the Leicester Square Theatre. So
I'll talk to him. Let's see. I'm talking to him probably because he and his brother Bill and I are working on a project together. We're writing this thing that we sold the idea. So I can't say too much about it. But and his schedule is crazy. I mean, his shooting schedule for Saul is nuts, because they shot everything when he was down. They had to shoot all the other stuff. So now it's all backloaded and it's all his stuff. And and they'll shoot for 12 hours of him, putting on different ties for a full day of shooting. So who knows? But I'll let him know. I'll talk to him about it.
Great. I think we're talking to his people, but that's brilliant. It's a very touching friendship the two of you have. It's often I was in a double act, and we're not as good friends anymore as you are. But you've seen the interviews from both sides about each other. I saw Bob saying how you were the funnier one of the two, which is a very lovely thing for someone to say in a double act.
That's not true, but no, we're very. We're very close. We respect each other a lot. I think one of the keys to the success is that neither one of us has much of an ego. We're also early on, we recognized what our individual strengths and weaknesses were, and what made us different, and what made us work as a unit so well. And we've never had like a blowout fight or anything like that, and I've learned a lot from him over the years, not just doing comedy, but as a person, and I think vice versa. And we truly like each other's company, and we make each other laugh a lot. And it's like that. It's too bad we're not sexually attracted to each other, because it would be awesome. It'd be the greatest relationship, you can imagine. But
you might have fizzled out after that. It's the will they, won't they, and then you do, and then all the chemistry's
gone. That's true. That's true.
So, that's just true. When you're both 90 years old, you should bang. Just get it out.
Yeah,
and make a special of that. Well, everyone will pay to see that special.
But that'll be in the future, so it'll be like VR, man. It'll be like metaverse, dude. You don't even know, man. It'd be fucking.
You'd be able to stick a finger in your ass while you.
But you could do it with VR. It'd be a virtual finger.
Amazing! I look forward to that. That's lovely, fantastic. And like you, I've got kids a little bit later in life, and. I saw you saying it was an act of narcissism, which I think is, I did something similar before I had kids about talking about people having kids and saying it's a wonderful thing. But do you feel that now you've got a kid? Do you feel it's, because I think you sort of almost, there's a danger of losing your own personality because you become the sort of slave to these children, or do you still feel?
I think that because I'm an older dad, I think I was ready to and happy to do this to change and do those things that a good dad would and could and should do. And meaning I'm not, I don't care about losing my personality. I don't care about, work doesn't come first anymore. And I'm, if I was 29, I think I'd be having real issues with that if I was much younger, but I've gotten to do all this stuff. I've gotten to live this great, life. And, I mean, obviously I can't, like, I used to be able to pick up and just go to London for 10 days and, or, you know, with my wife or by myself. And, I still have a lot of friends in London. I love it. I miss it. But you know, that's not going to happen. And now she's in school, so it's really not going to happen. But I any time that I start sensing like, it's, you know, I've got to do this thing because my kid, I got to pick up my kid at school and like, okay, great. I got to do all that stuff. And, and she is, she's pretty awesome. And I don't regret any of it. And I'm, I have been with her so much of her life. And, part of it is because of COVID, but I was, because of what I do for a living, there's, you know, it's like feast or famine. But, when I went out on tour, on the last tour, Oh Come On, I mean, we put a, crib in the tour bus, and my wife was with me, and we toured. And outside of going to a very truncated European leg of the tour and a movie that I shot in Oregon 3 summers ago, I mean, and that's a total of about, I don't know, 7 or 8 weeks. I've been with this kid since she came out of the womb. And 98% of American dads don't get that. They don't get that opportunity. So I know how lucky I am, and it's great. And at some point, you know, it's probably, should this project with Bob and Bill go, then daddy's going to have to be gone for big chunks of time. But she, you know, hopefully it won't be that big a deal, because and she'll want me gone. She'll want a break.
I think my daughter would like me to go, but it's, you know, I'm the same. I mean, the only thing, I had a bit of a health scare last year, and you know, obviously then started, and I had a friend who had kids late who sadly died of cancer a couple of years ago and left a young son. Does that worry you that you might not have, by having left it late, you might not get to see some of those later years?
I wouldn't say it worries me, but I think about it. But it is what it is. There's not a whole lot I can do about that. And, but I'm not that old.
But I'm not that old. But hopefully, last year, I just remember trying, because my son's like the same age as your daughter. My son's 4, and my daughter's nearly 7. And so, like, last year when I had this health issue, I kind of, and I'm just writing about it now, and I realized for those weeks when I really wasn't sure what was going on, I was desperately trying to make something, do something that they would remember. But every time we went out to do, we tried to make snowmen, but they got, like, covered in cat shit and that sort of stuff, you know. So you think,
they'll remember that.
They'll remember it. But that's not what you want to remember. You'll be remembered.
That's your legacy.
Remember the cat shit snowman guy. What happened to him? It was one day, let's catch it everywhere. But it's, yeah, I mean, you can't worry about it too much, I know, but I'm the same as you. And it was really great to have that time in lockdown with them. And I think you definitely do appreciate it more. And I know you know your own childhood wasn't the happiest, and father wasn't the greatest dad.
No.
So do you think you kind of, does that make you more determined to be a great dad?
Absolutely.
I've seen you say, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And that was a thought I had, you know, even when I was aborting kids, that was on my mind. I don't know that a day goes by when I don't think about it in some way, in some aspect.
Robin Ince, I don't know if you know Robin Ince, the UK comedian, he wrote a great book about what makes comedians, and one of the things is some kind of losing a parent, you know, either by through death or whatever, or a lot of comedians are adopted. Do you think that had any bearing on you becoming a comedian, or was that something you think was innate within you?
Oh, I think both. I moved around constantly. I was always the new kid. So I think it was a bit of a self-defense kind of, not even self-defense. I don't know if that's the right word. Just a way of getting accepted. And, you know, and funny kids are accepted by a group of people, except for the, and this is still the case even in adulthood, except for the kind of dumber ones who are a little put off or threatened by that for whatever reason. So there was that. And then my dad, you know, he was a shitty dad, but he was an interesting person, and he was very affable and extroverted, and he he had this kind of performance aspect to him, and he would play up his English accent. I'd hear it, like, especially when he was like trying to pick up women or flirting, the accent would go from, you know, a 5 to a 10 based on what he was trying to do. And he introduced me to a lot of, comedy when I was a kid. He loved Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy. He, you know, when I was very young, he gravitated towards that. And he kind of do like silly things. He also had, which is one thing I inherited from him, just shitty British DNA with my teeth. So he was young. He was he would have been like 30, you know, early 30s, you know, and he had a whole bridge that he would just take out, and he had all these missing teeth, and he would freak out the kids in a comic way, and he'd make funny faces, and you know, when I had friends over, like, dad, take your teeth out, and so there was that, because my mom is not like that at all. She's the exact opposite. She's shy. She's introverted. She's very intellectual. My dad was not intellectual at all. I'm such a combo of the two of them. But that's one thing I got from him, was very this kind of performative thing, you know. But then that mixed with constantly moving and being in a new school every single year, in a new region of the country too.
Right.
And have to make new friends, and that becomes your identity. You know, you're the funny guy. You're the guy who, you know, stood up to the teacher and said this funny thing, and now girls are paying attention to you. So, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's interesting. It's certainly not true of all comedians. I don't think I mean, my dad was my headmaster at school, which I think was probably the trauma I had to deal with. But I think
that sounds awful.
Show about it. It was sort of okay. It was sort of awful. I think it did affect me, but I did a show about it eventually, and I kind of realized all the things I am now, I was before I was at that school, you know, I was obsessed with comedy and sex and as a 4-year-old basically. So I feel like I was who I was, but again, yeah, maybe I had to be a bit funnier to deal with this odd situation.
Did you ever get other, especially older classmates? Did anybody ever kind of lean on you to tell your dad to, you know, give them a better grade or something like that? Or
no, I don't think anyone would have thought to do that. I hardly got bullied really. I remember one kid, like it was an older kid who then took the sports lesson because he was sporty. And then there was no teacher around, and he just sort of kicked me around the rugby field, you know, chased me around, just kicking me because there was no, because I was the headmaster's son. But that was the only real
bit. So you both got a workout. All right.
Yeah. So that's the only bit of bullying I can remember. I think people sort of thought, you know, that I would, you'd get like the answers to exams and stuff like that, you know. Right. So people thought, because I did quite well at school. So people, you know, some people would think, oh, he's getting all the answers. So. Right. Which was not the case, it was sort of weird, but you know, it was a nice countryside childhood I had, so I don't really. But I think so much. I think every now and again, I think of some things I do in my life, and I think I wonder if I'm doing that. I've written a blog every day for 20 years, right? That I put up online, and I just remember my dad saying there was a newspaper journalist called Mars Kington, I think it was. It was one of those guys who wrote a newspaper article every day in The Independent. I remember my dad saying, oh, this guy's so amazing because he can write a funny article every single day. And I just wonder, am I psychologically attempting to impress my dad by attempting to write a funny article every single, I mean, it's every day. Yeah. I haven't missed a day of it in 19 and a half years. So yeah, it's sort of, it,
even there with is your health scares.
Exactly. But that's, I mean, I think that's interesting with, as a comedian, it's interesting with what you said about Bob. You sort of, I absolutely wanted to get, you know, I did podcasts like within 7 days. I had an operation. I was doing podcasts within a week, you know, so obviously it's not riding a bike across a massive bridge, but it's, you know, you want to get back out there and do stuff. And I think there's probably something in comedians about that, isn't it? It's sort of refusing to lie down and refusing to be beaten by stuff. I suppose there's that element where you've got to fight back all the time, I suppose.
Yeah. And again, just like, it's hard to describe. It's such a, an innate need. It's a need to do stand up. That I don't have necessarily with writing or acting or producing or any of those other things. Like, I don't feel a need. I would miss them and I would want to do them, but not being able to get up on stage and that's why I was in the special. I say it's so rooted in narcissism, you know. But yeah, it's like, unlike anything, I really, you know, missed it, and it fucked with my head. I mean, specifically when we were in Toronto, it was depressing, and I was not, you know, it was hard on our marriage. And, and again, we were just locked down. And when we were in quarantine, when we couldn't even leave the house, and they were very strict and scared you with, like, you know, we're going to send cops around, you cannot be there. Or you have to be there rather, when I was with, and I would take my daughter for the first half of the day, and then we'd have lunch and she'd take a nap, and then my wife would take her for the second half of the day so that she could work in the mornings and early afternoon. And then I would work because a lot of my stuff was dealing with people from the West Coast. So I would take the later things. And you're just at home with a 3-year-old, 3.5, you know, almost 4-year-old. And, I lost 7 pounds in those 2 weeks, just 7 pounds, which is on me. I have a tiny frame. Like, on me, that's like, you can tell 7 pounds, you can really tell. And obviously I wasn't drinking as much, and just running around for, you know, 5 hours waking up and running around with my kid, literally running, just running around a couch.
It's hard. And I think being in a place, you know, I think having to do that in somewhere that isn't your home, that is,
yeah,
that's super, because that's more, it was all a bit like prison. I've just had to self-isolate over 10 days because I got COVID and it was, again, no, it was fine because I'm vaccinated. But it feels like you're in prison, but if you're actually in a different house,
yeah,
and you're actually not allowed to leave, it's the same as being in prison.
I mean, it was a pleasant prison.
you're rich. There are some nice prisons for rich people.
It was like American federal prison. It was hard, and that was just the beginning of it. It was not as bad as I imagined it was going to be really difficult, but she, you know, psychologically she was okay. And, you know, at no point was she like, I want to go home. She started around April, the end of April. But when we were there for the first couple months, it was really, really, really hard. Really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, this some of this show or this has come out of it. So it is, as a comedian, any bad experience sort of is, there's a part of you thinking, certainly with me last year, there's a part of you thinking, there's some stuff in this. This will be good. We'll get some stuff out of this. So it's good. You know, at least it's comedy's gain, even though we've been through unpleasant stuff. I noticed that you played Jerry Wexler in Genius, mm-hmm. and Mark Maron is playing him.
Yep.
In the film version. Did you get together to discuss?
How
you're going
to
play it?
We talked to each other. We overlapped because they were both shot in Atlanta, and they shot him out fairly quickly, but I was in 6 of 8 episodes of this show. So I was going back and forth a lot, and we were trying to connect, but we never overlapped enough to hang out. But I saw a very brief, like 6 second clip of him in the ad for his movie, and I immediately thought, like, oh, he did a better job.
What you should have done is like just one day gone into each other's jobs and just see if anyone noticed. If you're that good, you should both have been.
Well, I didn't watch either one of them, nor will so I'll let other people decide.
Okay, we'll let other people decide. And I saw you were in a film called Dark Divide.
Yeah,
I just saw a clip of it,
mm-hmm.
where an owl flies out of a tree and lands on your head.
Yeah, that was real.
Did it really go on your head?
Yes, it did. And even though they had padded the hat, if you could see it in the clip, those talons are. Those are massive. And that owl is fucking heavy. That's a heavy, dense creature. And it was a spotted owl. So it's this rare, big, you know, there are owl wranglers and whatnot. But yeah, that was that left a mark, even though I was padded up. And that's easily the most challenging movie role I've ever done in my life. The shooting of that was pretty intense, and it was it's based on a true story, and it was hard. That was the thing I mentioned, the film I did in Oregon, where I didn't see my daughter for a while. But it's good. I'm proud of it. The Dark Divide.
Were you scared it would have been an embarrassing way to die, and then the movie industry would have.
Oh, that would have been. I disagree. That'd be fucking awesome. Oh, if I'm going to die, that's the way I'd want to go. Yeah, shooting a movie in the woods and an owl, you know, inadvertently pissing off an owl and it decapitated.
And then the whole movie industry would have to look at the way it dealt with owls and actors.
That's right. And there'd be that, and then there'd be David's Law, and it would be enacted. It'd be universal.
Yeah, good. Well, I haven't seen the film yet, but I will. I'll check that out if you're.
It's beautiful. I will say that it's a stunning. Yeah. It's shot in the real Dark Divide, the Gifford Pinchot National Forest.
Terrific. I'm going to ask you a couple of emergency questions. See what comes up here. I've got a new.
And then I'm going to have to scoot. Okay.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I'll give you. Yeah. Got to have your beard trimmed.
Yeah.
All right. I will ask you. There was one I wanted to ask you, and I've forgotten to find it.
Post-it notes. Bookmark it. Come on now.
I should have looked at it ahead. All right. I'll just ask you a random one because I haven't got time to wait. Would you rather run a marathon or stay at home and eat a big bowl of ice cream and the ice cream has no calories and eating actually makes you fitter than doing a marathon and they give you a medal at the end for eating the ice cream and it's nicer than the medal you get for marathons? Which of those two would you rather do?
I mean, you don't even have to qualify the ice cream. I'd rather eat the ice cream. I don't want to do the marathon.
Okay, that's fine. I think that was sort
I'm
of
not a, I'm not one of a runner guy.
I'll ask if you could, if you all the world's museums and art galleries got together and said we would like to give David Cross one item because we love his work so much. We loved him in The Chipmunks and we loved him in Mr. Show. We loved everything he's done.
All right, so this is obviously the Uffizi Gallery, and the National Portrait Gallery. Okay, so those two got together.
You can take any art gallery, any museum, and they'll give you one painting or artifact or whatever you want from any art gallery or museum. Which would what would you have?
I'm going to mispronounce it, but at the huge museum in Istanbul, the Topkapi, whatever. I've been there. Huge, beautiful museum. And in a room, a tiny, tiny box. I know you can't see this if you're listening at home, but it's roughly the, oh gosh. I mean, let's say it's like 2 inches by an inch velvet, wood panel with, you know, gold inlay and things like that. And the little thing that, that describes it, tiny little piece of paper. This is under like heavy plexiglass in a guarded room. And I'm paraphrasing it, but within this blessed box lies a hair from the Prophet Muhammad. It's not open. Wasn't open. It was just a closed box.
Okay.
And you're just supposed to take it on good faith that there's a hair. I don't know which hair, where it came from, what part of the body, but a hair from the Prophet Muhammad was in that box. Nice. beautiful box
yeah,
but no, so not even a photograph of the hair next to the box, not it was just a closed box. And it's a beautiful museum. It's really, it's like their main museum. And there you go, that's the thing I would want. I would want the box. Okay. That supposedly has...
And would you look or would you not look? Would you keep it?
Oh, Schrodinger's cat, man. Schrodinger's cat. Okay. I can't look or it won't be there.
Okay.
If I look, it won't be there.
Well, that's a terrific answer. I don't think we'll get that one again. So it's nice to get an individual answer. I will let you go and get that beard trimmed because, you know, I will recommend to everyone that they check out your special and look at the link and we'll put a link to where you can get it. I really appreciate you giving the time. Ladies and gentlemen, fantastic. Give a round of applause at home to the amazing David Cross.
Well, and pull over. If you're driving, please pull over before you give a round of applause.
You have been listening to Raw Holostopar with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, David Cross. Thank you very much to Scant Regard for playing this wonderful music. I'm indebted to my friend and colleague and director and producer, Chris Evans, not that one. The fantastic work on making these remote gigs work. I'm also indebted to Kathleen McKeegan, who runs Rahalastapa, rahalastapa.com, an invaluable resource to past episodes. If you ever have to go back and look and see what you asked people last time, then go there. and then you'll know what you asked and you don't, you won't ask it again, and you don't have to listen to the episode. That's probably more useful for me than it is for you, but it's still a good podcast. It's a very good website for everybody else. Thank you very much to Ian Zoom and Ian Zencaster for helping us get all of our stuff, our transatlantic recordings done. And this is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. RichardHerring.com/gigs for all the upcoming Mahalaska Fuzz. Would love to see you there. Come and see it live if you can. And hopefully loads more coming in 2022.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.